Nice to have you back with us. I love hearing that music. It only means one thing, and that is Kerry Crowley of the Bay Area News Group joins us. Kerry, how are you?
Well, Marty, with the combination of that song and the weather heating up, it's starting to feel like summer, so I'm doing a little bit better.
Oh, very good. Well, I know you're back working again. I'm glad to hear that. I know you've had a very busy week. I'll start off with baseball in general. We ask everyone tonight, and it's been a very big topic of the conversation. What do you think? Are we going to see baseball in a couple of weeks? You think we'll see spring training 2.0?
You know, Marty, I remain the eternal optimist. I think that, as we've talked about for weeks now, there's too much for both of these sides to lose if they can't come to an agreement. And I know that things seem really far apart right now on the financial side, but the agreement that they've made seemingly on the player safety and the medical side, that, you know, each side at least has come to an understanding on that front. I'm not sure if the technical terms have been agreed to, but that's aside from the point. I think that that was huge progress. And I do think that eventually they will realize that you can't go dark for a year and a half. I know that there's public safety issues, that there's public health issues, and that there's a lot more going on in the world. But if you want to stay relevant as a sport, you can't go dark for a year and a half. And the owners will realize it. The players will realize it. And I think that we ultimately will have baseball, whether it's July 4th. At this point, I can't say, but I remain optimistic that at some point in July, we will be having actual baseball to talk about. Hopefully before that, Marty, we'll be talking about spring training 2.0.
Well, it'll probably be up here, too, the way they've talked about it. It sounds like it's going to be up at Oracle Park, I guess they're calling it these days. So we'll get ready for that. Did you have a reaction to the minor leaguers all over baseball being released? And I know the draft is coming up. We'll talk about it next weekend more. But there really were very bitter reactions to teams releasing that many players and not paying them, until the end of the summer. Some teams are, some aren't. What was your take on that?
Well, first off, I think that it's important to understand that a lot of these players would have been cut at the end of March if spring training had gone on as normal, because there just weren't enough roster spots as things stand. But when you've got teams cutting significant portions of their minor league farm system beyond what was necessary, that's what gets at me. And, you know, I look at the teams that have not committed past June, and the San Francisco Giants are one of them, to paying their minor league players. And with the draft coming up in 2 weeks, I can't understand it, because you're going to have a situation where there's a free-for-all after round five. And in that situation, all of these prospects are going to be looking at which organization is going to be the best fit for me, which organization is going to take care of me, because they're all going to have $20,000 offers sitting on the table from several teams. And to me, the tiebreaker could be those organizations that have said, look, we're going to pay you through the end of the minor league season. We're going to take care of you just like we would during the regular minor league season. And so I can't seem to understand why the Giants, with pocketbooks as deep as they have, and I know that ownership is hurting a little bit, but they're not hurting to the point where they can't make that commitment. So I think it's something that they need to do and step up before the draft. And I know everyone in the front office realizes that. It's a matter of conveying that to ownership, and ownership having an understanding that it is an absolute necessity to have it in place before the draft, that these players will be paid through the end of August. Because if you're going to say that your minor league organization, your minor league farm system is a family, you have to back that up with your actions.
Yeah, I think the minor league issue is something that is industry-wide, that they've all talked about, that they want to implement in 2021. The pandemic gives them a reason to implement many of these things now, because there obviously is not going to be a minor league season. So I think, again, we're in a situation where the big teams and the big boys and the big owners are getting together and dictating this is the way it's going to be. And we're going to have to live with it. So it's going to be a new world for putting organizations together, developing players, teams that are in leagues. They're going to disappear. But I think a lot of it is being pushed now because of the pandemic, and we would have seen it next year anyway. So let's see where it goes. But I don't like it. I think anything that takes away from player development ultimately hurts the big club.
Yeah, I agree with you 100% that we would have seen this after the 2020 season if it would have been a normal year because we knew that minor league contraction was on the way. But at the same time, when you see organizations like the Miami Marlins and the Kansas City Royals that are supposedly a little more strapped for cash than the big market teams, making that commitment through the end of August to the vast majority of their players and their farm system to pay them the bare minimum, really. I think that it shows that all 30 teams have the capability to do this, and it's up to all 30 organizations to recognize that it's the right thing, particularly before the draft. And what the Oakland A's did, I really found abhorrent, because you're telling these players that they are not going to be paid, and then they can't go sign elsewhere. I just think that that is everything against the spirit of baseball. It's everything against the spirit of work in the United States and what so many people have fought for. And so I just, that really struck me the wrong way. But I think other teams have an opportunity to step up and set an example. And Royals general manager Dayton Moore, he certainly made comments that struck me as having a great understanding of the situation and having empathy for what players are going through right now. And I think that the industry can look to him for what it should be doing.
Yeah, it's not that much money involved when you look at the billions in the industry. And I know there's money to be lost, and it's not my money, it's someone else's. But, boy, they've been living off a cash cow for a number of years now. Mm-hmm. And it seems they're squeezing the little people now. And that I guess that bothers me more than anything.
Yeah, well, when you hear statistics, I think I read this week that there's been 17 consecutive years of record revenues in Major League Baseball. The owners get to take that in year after year, and as soon as things go south, they're not okay with it. That just strikes me as not understanding the commitment they've made in owning a team. It strikes me as trying to think that they're above the entire system, and it really strikes me as wrong. And so I'd like to see some widespread change in the industry. And what I have noticed this week, Marty, is a few more minor league players stepping up and using their voices. And I think that's really important, because eventually I'd love to see a minor league baseball players association where they're able to collectively bargain, where they're able to fight for better working conditions. And so to see a few more players using their voices, knowing that teams could hold that against them, that to me was a sign of progress for them.
Well, we'll see. Good discussion. Kerry Crowley with us. Kerry, so you were off for a month, and you had the secret project going on, and it was revealed this week, and you've gotten tremendous, tremendous, tremendous publicity about it. So here you go. Let us know. Now you can tell us about it and how this came about and where it's going. But congratulations. You've gotten a lot of great reactions this week to your new project.
Well, thank you, Marty. I'm really humbled and really honored by everything everyone has had to say about it, because the project is called Your Future in Sports Writing, and it's geared toward helping young journalists, college age, college graduates, people who are 2 to 3 years inside the industry looking for their next break, to secure jobs and internships. And it's to give them the tools they need, the resources they need to figure out how to develop their resumes, develop their cover letters, nail job interviews, develop their skills as well, and to have so much buy-in from sports writers around the industry. I was able to talk to 28 sports writers for this project who all offered up their tips, their techniques for moving jobs, for securing internships, for starting out in the industry, for thinking about story ideas. It was really, really cool to see all the buy-in from everyone, because, on a daily basis, you can hear about how we're competitors, how we're always looking to get the next scoop against each other. But when it comes to building a more sustainable future for our industry, it was 100% buy-in across the board. And so far, so good from the feedback I've received from the young journalists who have signed up for the course. It's been really exciting to see their comments on it. They feel like they've learned a lot, and that's all you can hope for when you release something like this.
No, it's been great. So let's flesh it out a little bit more, exactly what you did, how someone gets involved with it. There is a cost involved, but for anyone who wants to get in the industry, it's the guide. And I get asked about, you'll have to do one on broadcasting at some point. I get asked that question all the time. And, of course, life has changed for me since I started in 1996 to today, if for someone trying to get into broadcasting. But let's give me a little bit more about the project and how people get involved with it, because it's almost necessary for anybody in college who wants to become a sports writer.
So it's an 18-chapter course, and there's 18 chapters of text. There's 28 interviews with professionals in the industry who all take on a different chapter, and they share their wisdom on a different chapter. So I've talked to someone like Connor Latorna, who covers the Golden State Warriors for the San Francisco Chronicle. He shares how he writes game stories. I talked to Lindsay Adler and Alex Coffey, beat reporters for The Athletic and baseball, who were outstanding, and they gave their tips on feature stories. I talked to Samantha Pell, who's a tremendous hockey reporter for the Washington Post, and she shared all her insights about how to start out on a beat and what you need to do to stand out on a beat to differentiate your coverage. And so there's all sorts of lessons like that mixed in to the course curriculum. And then there's videos as well at the end that have simple takeaways for each lesson that student journalists can write down, can keep, and can use as they're preparing for job interviews. And so to take the course, you go to teachable.com, type in your future in sports writing. You can also look up my social media profiles. I've got the course links there. And it is $99, and we have had a number of students sign up at full price. But at the same time, Marty, I recognize that it is not a great time for the economy, particularly for sports writers who are just graduating college, for sports writers who just lost internships due to the coronavirus. So anyone who has lost work, anyone who feels like they would love to take the course but don't have the financial means to do it, I'm encouraging them to reach out to me, whether it be via email, whether it be via Twitter, direct message. Reach out to me, and I will work with them to make the course affordable. We've had several people donate courses to young writers in need. We've had several writers who have reached out to me, and we've worked out agreements that have been really great that have dropped the course cost by 80%. And so I just want to make sure that every young journalist knows that cost is not going to be prohibitive. I'm going to work with them to make sure that they can take this course.
So how does someone get in touch with you? What is the address, so to speak?
So the best way to do so is over my email, probably, and that's kocrowley@gmail.com, or via Twitter direct message. They can contact me, KO_Crowley on Twitter. My direct messages are open. And anyone, you know, if you can't figure out how to use the direct message function, just tweet at me. I will show you how, and we will get something done. I've been fortunate to have a little bit of time over the last few days to get back to people and get people set up in the course, and I'm committed to doing that throughout the next few weeks. And so, yeah, anyone who is interested, reach out, email kocrowley@gmail.com or Twitter, KO_Crowley, and we will get you set up as soon as we can so that you can begin taking this course, because I'm really, really excited to share it with people.
And if you can't figure out how to get in touch with Kerry, you really need the course.
You know what? If people can't figure out how to get in touch with me, that's not a great starting point, Marty.
No, not at all. All right. So if you had to give, you know, and it's eight, so many chapters, did you say 18 chapters? I forgot. Was it 18?
Yeah, 18.
Is there some theme or something, a thread that runs through it that you could share with us?
I think so. And a lot of it is discovering how you can add value through your work to help you or the company you're working for generate revenue. Because in journalism school, one of the things that professors and just universities overlook so often is understanding the business model and understanding how you're serving your customers, you're serving your readers, you're trying to make sure that people are staying engaged. And so the main theme in every chapter is figuring out how to differentiate yourself, how to make yourself stand out, how to make yourself a more valuable journalist through your writing so that you can appeal to different publications that are looking to hire you. And I think that when people understand that, they're much more likely to be successful in job interviews. I know so many different journalists that have contributed to this course talked about discussing business, talked about discussing subscriptions, talked about discussing page views and generating those in their job interviews. And people who are able to do that are much more likely to succeed. So not only that, but also building professional networks, getting in touch with mentors, getting in touch with other professional journalists who can help you along the way. There's so many different lessons that people can learn on that front. And so I would say that those are the two primary themes of the course, are adding value through your work and figuring out who can help you take the next step in the industry.
Yeah, great. That is really true. And that it's almost because I did go to law school, you know, and practice for 25 years. There's the academic side of learning law, and then there's the practical side of how you run a law practice and how you engage clients and how you get clients and how you serve clients and things like that. And that you had to learn once you got out there. They couldn't teach that to you in college, and that's a very important part of what you're talking about. And it makes me think of Henry Schulman. Henry is one of the best on Twitter promoting exactly what you said, getting page views, podcast listens, and things like that. He understands that completely.
And not only that, Henry has been an incredible mentor to me throughout my time on the Giants beat. I know that we're competitors. We like to joke with each other that we go back and forth with the San Francisco Chronicle and the San Jose Mercury News and the Bay Area News Group. But he has taught me so much, and so have Andrew Baggerly, Alex Pavlich, Chris Half, John Shea, and you, Marty, as well, sitting with me before every open clubhouse session. The lessons that I've soaked up in the Giants press box allowed me to create this course. And so I think that people aren't just learning from the 28 people who contributed to the course. They're also learning from all the mentors who made an impression on the journalists who contributed to the course, because we really do pass on so much in this industry.
Fabulous. Great. Good for you. Good for you. Folks okay?
Yeah, the folks are doing well. The folks are hanging in there, so that's good. You know, riding their bikes around the city, Marty, and can't complain.
Okay, and Original Joe's in your future?
Yes, my dad was talking about doing Original Joe's this evening. So a late dinner for us, but still figuring it out. And Original Joe's could be on the table if they haven't filled up. You know, they fill up on the weekend sometimes, and you got to call early. That's the trick to getting in with Original Joe's, is calling early so that you can get your order on, so that you can get a butter cake while they still have one.
Yeah, you know, it's so true. It's interesting. We digress just a little bit to have fun with it. But John Dugan told me on Mother's Day, Westlake sold out right away.
Mm-hmm. I mean, we tried. We couldn't get in, but I'm gonna have to use the Marty Lurie connection next time.
Yeah, very good. All right, great to have you on. I'm glad that you're well, and congratulations on this. Honestly, you've gotten tremendous publicity on it. There's nothing like it in the country. And for any young person who wants a career in sports writing, it's a must. It's just a must. But there's that practical side of it that you have in there. And that's something that you don't get in college. That's something you can only get from people that do the job. And I think that's really important. So very, very good. Well, job well done.
Thank you so much, Marty. And thank you for sharing all that you have with me over the past 3 to 4 years, because again, something like this wouldn't have been possible but without you and the other Giants media members who I see in the press box every day.
Well, you taught me how to send my interviews to Raf at KMBR. You
know, there is a big now technology component to the course.
That's it. For technology, I go to you. You're my guy.
Yes.
All right. Kerry, thank you so much. As always, we'll talk to you next week. And hopefully, I say this every week, we'll have more news by next week. I hope we will. So we'll chat with you next weekend.
Thanks so much, Marty. Have a good one.
All right. That is Kerry Crowley of the Bay Area News Group. Check him out online. Absolutely get in touch with him. This is a very worthwhile project. All right. More coming up. KMBR 680, 104.5, the sports leader.